All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another exciting broadcast on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. This is the Vinny Eastwood Show. Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. Now, we have to acknowledge that so many people who are talking on the radio these days and making a stand for justice and something of that nature, there's often consequences for this, you know? Quite annoying consequences a lot of the time. Sometimes they threaten your money supply, threaten your family, or just you, your person. And sometimes you just need to be there to support them as they're going through the struggle. Today we have Santos Bonacci coming at us live from Australia. Santos, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. It's a pleasure.
What's been going on with you, man? Give us an update.
Well, I'm nice and free at the moment, I guess you could say. As you mentioned there, that people who speak truth are not really appreciated in this incarnation of Roman Empire, which we call society, civilization, slavery. Certainly not appreciated. Many have been the warriors and the truthers and the prophets that have been sent forth from spirit in the past to speak against this evil materialistic machine. And they've suffered the consequences. And as you know, and probably some of the listeners, I've just done a spell in a cage, you could say, where they put humans, called prison, you see. And supposedly for contempt of court. Now, I'm not going to elaborate too much on the whole 6 weeks of being in prison and the so-called farce called contempt of court. Not at this moment. I need, you know, a couple of hours, really. Vinny, you're lucky you caught me at a time. Today I do have time to speak. You know, I've had to actually say no to a lot of guys. For the moment, especially till the end of this month, because every day is going to be packed with activities. As you can imagine, I was released on the 22nd of September last month, and I've got lots of things to catch up on. I've got detoxing to do from poor quality food, you know, terrible emotional, spiritual, physical, and mental climate in jail. I have some teeth to fix. I've got lots and lots of stuff to do before I head back north to where I'm going to be living. I'm in Victoria at the moment. But certainly, as you know, and you report weekly, daily probably, with people who are speaking the truth and the dangers and the risks that lie in doing so. What I bring to my friends and intelligent people around the world is syncretism. And that is the science of merging all the sciences. You know, this is, it's doable and it has been done in the past. And it's actually the one and only thing that empire has persecuted and seeks to destroy forever. The moment it is spoken of anywhere on the planet, in whatever form, whether it's literature, whether it's philosophy, the spoken word, this system will come down hard on the prophets, the so-called prophets, or the clairvoyants, the seers, the truthers, the pathers. There you go, there's a good word, pather, one who is on the path and cannot and will not get off the path to eternal life and glory, because that's what awaits us. So just in a nutshell, Vinny, that's it. I'm detoxing at the moment and getting myself back to where I was before the 4th of August when I was kidnapped by a bunch of thugs. And that's what they are. They're order followers. They are low-life bottom feeders who need help and love. I'm not angry at all. They need love because they've been traumatized themselves. They follow orders because in past lives they haven't done any soul development. And so they find themselves in this life with very, very weak love energy, will, and spirituality. They're cut off from the source of spirit, which is the source of their existence. It's like a fan. You pull the plug out of the wall and it starts to wind down. It loses its energy source. So these individuals, they're committing thuggery, and they're also preparing themselves for many miserable lives to come, cycles of birth, suffering, and death, which they themselves will bear the consequences of. So individuals like us who are harmed by these other individuals have no choice but to forgive them and to send them love because they know not what they are doing. Now, that does not cover all of them. There are some out there who do know what they are doing. They know full well what they are doing, and they know full well that they will be rewarded according to their deeds. And it will be a sad day for those individuals. But all I can say, Vinny, for those people is just thank the heavens that they have taken that position and it's not you and I, because we've chosen the truth path, and glory awaits us. It's only a matter of time.
Be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid, as Jack Blood says. This is I'm kind of like feeling it on you, bro. Like to be honest, what was the kind of did you feel the sort of initial shock once you realised you were actually being put in a cage?
Yeah, look, I prepared myself where I was living alone in a cottage. I prepared myself in every way, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. I got myself up to nearly 100% healthy, fitness, and I was doing really, really well. So I knew that potentially that day could come because, you know, evil entities are not happy unless they perpetrate their evil schemes. And, of course, the bar and all of these organizations which work for the Crown, which is the Triple Crown of the three papal bulls of the Vatican, these bulls are basically just contracts to enslave mankind and to harvest all of their energy and all of their resources and direct them to the so-called New World Order and so forth, big slave plantation of the Vatican and the Vatican families who hide behind that corporate, you know, smokescreen veneer, and they truly are the evil of this planet. They themselves are also controlled, though, so mercy on these souls, you know. But I prepared myself because I knew that that eventuality could happen, and so I fared pretty well, really. I'm pretty happy with the preparation, especially the spiritual preparation. I came to a point in my development where I realized that all is happening in the now.
Well, I wonder, one of the things about prison, they say, is that you learn to become a better criminal. To associate with them, you know?
Mm, yeah, for sure.
You made any friends on the inside? Anybody is in there for their own reasons?
Oh, yeah, man, I met some sad stories in there, people that have been framed, their bonds are being milked by rich bar members who love to enrich their pockets with evil enrichment, and through the bonds, the birth certificate bonds, doing transactions, so of securities on the stock market, stock being slaves. And these poor individuals, you know, I enlightened them. I mean, they did them a favour, really, by putting me in there. I, you know, I was able to help a lot of people to see.
You literally had a captive audience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was able to help a lot of young guys there and older ones too. There was one guy who was in jail for talking about his cure for cancer. There was another guy who was framed. He wrote up his will. He's got a lot of property. And he wrote up his will. Of course, when a barrister sees, you know, fat wills that have got a lot of stuff in there, they send their thugs around. What they do in Australia is they send ASIO thugs to go around and cause trouble on their properties, start a fight, then go back and report to the police and have them charged for, you know, for defending themselves on their own property. And then, of course, the proceedings start, and this one guy did 8 years in jail because he defended himself on his own property because a thug that was paid by the bar, of course, the Crown, to go and make trouble for him. He did was doing jail time, 8 years, and he's got a $200,000 bill when he gets out for, you know, costs and what have you, and charges, and so this is what happens, you know, when the greedy woe to you lawyer types, the money changers. These are the only two things that Jesus in the Gospels condemns, by the way, the money changers and the lawyers. When they find, you know, fat wills that have got plenty of stuff in there, you know, for them to steal, off they go, they send their thugs and cause harm to human living souls, and they disobey and violate the only law in existence, which is do no harm. So the money changers, who are they? The courts, the Crown, and the lawyers, the bar. Woe to them. Better it would be for them to tie a millstone around their neck and cast themselves into the sea than to have been born.
Well, it'd be certainly
better
for us. And
I've seen that firsthand. Yep. Yes,
on top of
so,
this, in fact, this reminds me of a story that just came out in New Zealand a couple of days ago. I read it out on the broadcast. New Zealand is now going to make it a lot more difficult for journalists to go into prison and to interview people.
Oh, yeah, of course they don't want to. They want people to know that a good portion, a good percentage of the souls, the individuals in prison have been put in there by a nasty, illegitimate so-called government that is just corporate thuggery. And look, it matters not whether they prevail or whatever they do. It really doesn't matter, because as long as we know the truth and serve the truth with all of our energy, we will be rewarded thusly, you know, and they will have their rewards. And as the scriptures say, do not envy the evil one. Do not marvel at his works and how he prospers, appears to prosper. For the day will come when you will look to the right and to the left, and you will look everywhere for him, and he will not be found. And this is a promise. These scriptures are written in stone. Those sacred works, shame that people take them literally and don't see the poetic and allegoric and anagogic truths that are embedded in the scriptures. But there is more truth in the metaphor and in the allegory, in the style in which they are written, than if they were written literally. But literal truths do come out of poetic, you know, writings. And so when you realize that these scriptures were written in the past but also in the future, because they know the future, because all is now, then you realize how true they are. There will be a day when you won't have these monkey order followers who are controlled by a pedophile elite, because they will be consumed by the fires of truth. The universe is a loving universe at its source, not at its effect. Its cause is pure love. Its effect is love and so-called evil, because it's dualistic, it's polarized. And so in the effect world, the electrical world of effects, we have a war between Satan and Jesus, Horus and Set, Rama and Ravana, etc., etc. And so what we are witnessing is the playing out in space and time of people's true nature. People are allowed time to show what that stuff they're really made of. And so, as I said before, be thankful that they go in your place, that they are actually doing the evil deeds which are abhorrent to you and I, and therefore go into that dreadful place where only misery and suffering exists. And so, as all the scriptures say, in the material planets, wherever birth and death in physical bodies occurs, there will always be suffering. And there are many, many millions of physical planets in the universe. And there are also many, many millions and billions of spiritual planets, which are the counterparts, where only bliss, sat, chit, ananda, vigraha, exist. But at present, we're trapped on this middle kingdom prison planet called Earth for various reasons. Some, for punishment. Some have chosen to come here to help others, according to the Hermetica, according to the Bhagavad Gita and all the great works. And so the good deeds that we do go before us, when our bodies are done with, these vehicles, and the ones who have spoken the truth go to better places, the ones who have remembered the supreme source and cause, whether you call him Krishna, Christ, Jehovah, Atum, Allah, matters not, but that one is the one of the whole universe, and the ones who are devoted to that, which is truth, being, they will have their rewards. And so no use having any grudge, any bitterness. Just let them play out their desires and their will, and all will be sorted out.
I was thinking about this actually the other day, and that kind of like struck a chord with me, in fact, the passage you just quoted there, because I noticed that if you are honest and generous and you help others and things like that, and you self-sacrifice for the good of things that are greater than you, just the man, you don't get a whole lot of financial rewards from it, and you don't get a whole lot of power from it. But if you're deceitful and you steal and you lie and cheat, then those rewards come to you massively. And I found myself wondering, why is it that the honest are made to live in poverty so often, and the dishonest are the ones who become the super wealthy?
Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. What that means is there's a different reward for souls who seek goodness. Goodness is godness. The Neoplatonists considered these two terms interchangeable, God and good. And so blessed are they. Already you know the blessings. You have an inkling of the blessings to come. But these ones, they have a dread. The materialists who gratify their selfhood and aggrandize their egos in sense gratification, they don't know this. They don't understand this. They laugh at this. They think this is foolish talk, because they only see how they can be benefited by material things, and so their paunch is their god, their belly, And, you know, they serve material interests, power, greed, fame, glory, success, what they call success, prosperity, growth. You know, they always talk about productivity and capitalism and growth. And what is this? You know, this is basically the growing of their pockets. They want more in their pockets. They're never satisfied. A rich man will never be satisfied with their riches, because even the riches that they seem to acquire do not belong to them. They belong to the universe. They're just atoms. They're just molecules that are here one day and gone the next. They're transient molecules, and these individuals think that they can capture them and control them and manipulate them and have power over the material world. This is all delusion and a chasing after the wind. But unfortunately, you can't even speak this to them. You just cannot, because they do not have the spiritual mind. They're not imbued in the higher mind. Once you get on the path of truth, this is when the higher mind expands, and you can only but serve that mind. This is what we're here to do. You know, yoga and meditation all lead to devotion, devotion to truth, devotion to the Lord and being of truth. So beyond creation is being, and we are living beings, but we are also creatures. How can we be both? Creatures are created. Beings are not created. And so, well, this is because our source is in the highest of all levels of living and being in the universe. Mankind, the Adamic race, Adam is the sine wave, the ecliptic, as I've proven in all of my presentations, originates from cause, the Empyrean, and this is the place to which we return, you know, if we haven't stained ourselves with blood of killing and murdering and telling lies and living in lust. These are all things that are severely condemned in all the scriptures. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, the four pillars the four pillars of truth to be avoided at all costs would be meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. Whereas in the Judeo-Christian scriptures, they have their equivalent would be gluttony, drunkenness, fornication, and loose conduct. Those are the four pillars. And basically, avoiding those four things, one is immediately immersed in the higher mind. Now, you know, this is pretty shocking to a lot of people because, you know, free sex, intoxication of all kinds, gambling, taking risks, making the mind very, very agitated, because that's what gambling does. You see, we put our hope in false things. So this is why the Bhagavad Gita, probably the greatest spiritual work, in my opinion, my humble opinion, it would have to be, you know, on par with the Bible, which is my favorite book. A lot of people cringe when I say that because they really have the perspective of the corporate churches when they think of the Bible. There's nothing literal in it at all. It's pure literary work, and it's a work of poetry. So, basically those are the things to avoid. It's unfortunate that we've been indoctrinated to think that those things that please the senses so much are part of, you know, natural living, but they are not.
They're part of our daily life. In fact, that's kind of people's only motivation, really. And as a result, those things don't actually make you happy, you know. Temporarily you feel good, but if you sit them down really quiet and just go, what makes you happy in life? I don't know. Yeah, you got all the pornography you want, all the drugs that you need, all the alcohol you can drink, all the cigarettes you can smoke, all the money in the world, but you're miserable because you don't really have anything.
Yeah, very true. Self-service, sense gratification, these will all lead to repeated cycles of life and death and misery and suffering. Yes, there will be some pleasure. You know, it's the garden of earth is a pleasure garden. There's no doubt about that. And we all dabble in there. No one's perfect. I'm not saying I am at all. We know that we're not. But we strive to improve. We strive to correct what is erroneous in us. And we look for truth in everywhere we can find it. And adapt to that truth as we go. Now, I know I've improved immensely over the years, and I've got a long ways to go. But it is important to acknowledge the truths that will lead to, quote-unquote, salvation. Salvation has the root salt in it, and salt is the key electric mineral which sustains living. That's why it's all of the liquids in the bodies have salt in them, you know, urine, saliva, blood, nerve fluid, and all of the liquids, sweat. And so this is the source, the key of salvation, to balance the chemistry of the body, to balance what is not right in us and sublimate, you know, the lead into gold, the vices into virtues. It's pretty simple. I mean, we know this. We know this in our heart of hearts. It's not something that we learn automatically by going to church. They always veil the truth. They always colour the truth, manipulate it and distort it. But you can never, ever eradicate the truth from your heart. Problem is, a lot of people don't hear that truth because they don't meditate enough. And, you know, their hearts, they're following sense gratification desires, which will, as I said, lead to many, many cycles of suffering and misery. And so to escape this, one has to serve the higher consciousness. That's all you've got to do. It's so simple. Salvation, or whatever you want to call it, ascension, is very, very simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. Serve the higher mind, not the lower mind, which is animalistic. How much more simple can it be? All the scriptures tell you that. You know, some say serve Krishna. Be a devotee of Krishna. Some say, you know, worship the Christ. In no other name shall he be saved. In Egypt,
Santos, you're breaking up there.
Revere Atum. Well, it's the higher mind. It's even beyond the higher. Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, there's a little bit of a delay. Do you want to quickly hang up and ring back? It might resolve the issue.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cheers. We'll just reset there for a second. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, I think what this has taught me is that a lot of religious beliefs actually have a lot of, you know, basis in factual and reality, and that's how I perceive religion and any kind of belief structure, is that there actually has to have a reason to do it. There has to be a good reason. I think that the whole concept of delayed gratification is a good idea, because ultimately what's happening with a lot of our lives at the moment is we're getting constantly gratified all the time. We lose taste for it. You know? It simply no longer matters anymore. We don't... It loses the flavor if you get something good all the time. And that's the problem with our lives, is that the hardship and the suffering we have is kind of meaningless. And I wonder as well, if you're going through a lot of meaningless suffering, why exactly would you continue to do it once you realize the futility of it? And I think this is one of the essential cruxes that people who are like trapped in the workforce or trapped in the education system or, you know, just trapped in any way, shape or form in your life, don't continue it if it doesn't make any sense doing it. Santos, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks.
Sounding a lot better.
Great.
Now, where were we?
Well, I was speaking about service to the higher mind, the spiritual mind, and that's what it's all about. Some call it truth. You know, we're truthers. Whatever you want to call it, but this is the path, the way back to bliss, because our nature, our core nature is bliss. Bliss, consciousness, and existence. Sat, Chit, Ananda. And so to escape misery and suffering, there's only one way. Indulging in sense gratification is simply not the way. Yes, you'll get a lot of pleasure, but on the other side of pleasure, it's a two-faced, two-sided coin, there will be pain. Inescapable.
Now, I've started to kind of realize that the pain's basically what's valuable in my life. Like, most of the really valuable lessons have been the ones that have cost me quite a lot.
Yep, very true. They are valuable because, as says in the Bhagavad Gita, we are souls that have need of discipline or have been wayward, are sent into this materialistic world to feel the pain, gather experience, and bring those back and be more, add to our soul content when we return, rather than be less when we return. As the parable of of Jesus in the gospel, he says the kingdom of the heavens is like a man who gives his slaves one denarii, another one two, another one five. And the wicked ones, they buried their denarii because they were fearful of the master. Whereas the good slave, he invested it and brought a return. Well, basically, this is a slave of, not a slave as in the materialistic sense. It's a slave of one who cannot but serve truth. And they bring back a hundredfold in interest because they invest that denarii, that gift. We all have gifts. But some people are too busy chasing jobs and money to appreciate the valuable gifts that they have in their hearts, the gems that they have, the qualities, the talents and
I think it's kind of like this constant fear of scarcity, you know? Like, oh, there's not enough money to pay the rent next week. I've got to go and work. And blah, 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 blah. Sometimes if you kind of like give up everything and you stop worrying about scarcity and you start thinking about abundance and doing your own thing, everything that you need turns up for you when you need it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it does. I remember when I was a Jehovah's Witness, I used to love the expression Jehovah Jireh, which means Jehovah provides, because when you're in service, even though that was a very materialistic mindset of service, I was part of a corporate church, the principle still works because it's a universe of abundance. It provides. It just provides. Everything is provided for. This is why the distraction of money is so harmful. You know, once upon a time there was trade and barter, and everything got done, everything was taken care of, and there was plenty of provision, and there was no scarcity. There never is scarcity. There are cycles when there's more and less, but never is there so little that there's just not enough. Everything's manageable. And so as you say, if you put the more important things
Oh, no, we're breaking up again, Santos.
Truth.
Yeah, just quickly hang up and ring
peace,
me straight back
love,
again, and we'll get you right back.
Kindness,
on.
Should mildness.
Be a few seconds. There you go. Are you back?
Yep.
All right, there we go. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so the virtues, we know what they are. We know what virtues are. Don't have to talk about that. And so if we pursue those and put those first, there's no doubt about the outcome. Never will the universe deny us greater things, greater eternal glory, according to our works. This is the most assured rule. You know, they say in this world there's nothing surer than death and taxes. Well, there's a much more sublime truth to that. That's the materialist mind speaking there, that has been indoctrinated by empire, Rome. Whereas this true universal truth is that the one who is on the path of truth will never be denied an immense eternal glory, everlasting. Because in this world there is a conditioned world, of a temporal conditioned world, time, temp. And so there's temporal existence, bodies born, bodies die, and then there's everlasting unconditioned. And so we participate in both natures. And we've been given emotion and mind, the two creators of the soul. Mind learns and emotion experiences. And when we bring the harvest of experience and learning and develop mind and emotion equally and in a balanced way, because many don't do this. Many have advanced minds but don't have much EQ. They have IQ but no EQ, or vice versa. Some people are very emotionally balanced and happy and evolved, but mentally they're suffering. And so when we look after these two creators, both male and female, in their designation, then the soul grows and we add more to the soul. And this is what's called saving the soul. Losing the soul is the opposite, where people actually neglect nurturing their psychic makeup and go after the sense gratification. And so they build their whole world around it. Power, progress. There's another word, progress. Oh, it's so good in the eyes of the materialist. They want progress, you know, more railroads and, you know, more aeroplanes in the sky and more industry, you know, so we can make more stuff and buy more stuff and to the detriment and in spite of, you know, the soul. And so you see a world where, you know, they put billions into space travel and things like that, and yet you see more and more homeless on the street, suffering, wars ravaging the world, politicians lying, murdering, mass murderers like the Bushes and the Clintons and Obama and Brown and all of these goons, liars, and we're happy to have them stand up on their little soapboxes and continue to spew out lies, venomous lies. These are individuals that should be jailed immediately. You know, they should be arrested. Warrants should be issued by all of humanity, and they should be arrested, stopped in their tracks, and a legitimate form of self-government should be, you know, re-established as it was many years ago when matriarchy ruled. Patriarchy is the absolute poison. Never works. It never works in this universe. It's a universe of feminine goddess energy, really, Isis, etc. And so to go against that monotheism and patriarchy and all of this setup of the world has really just poisoned the world and caused so much detriment to mankind. And you can see that. It's pretty obvious. People know, you know, they can see. They see the news. They read the papers. And there's nothing but trouble upon trouble in the earth simply because men don't have the answer and care not to listen to the answer. They want to fill their pockets with gold and their bellies with riches, you know. Time for change, and it has changed. The solar system has already upgraded its own DNA, its physical, spiritual, emotional, and mental DNA. The solar system is a being, and it's also a creature. So when you look at the sun, as I've proven in all my astro-theological presentations, the sun is Krishna. Not the physical sun that we see, that's the body. The part that burns and produces heat. Because behind that, back of the physical sun is the emotional and mental sun, and back of that is the spiritual sun. And this is Krishna, Vivasvan, Rama, the Ram, the Lamb of God. And so it's no use looking at these bodies as, you know, they were rocks in the sky or what have you. They are beings. They are beings, they are prime creator, and they are creator at the same time. They are all expansions of Krishna. So are you and I. Can't deny that, and if we do, well, you only punish yourself because it's going to take eons of time to come to that realization that we are all particles and parts and parcels of the One. Call it Krishna, if you will, whatever you want. But the solar system has definitely been upgraded because that's what it does. These things are promised in prophecy. All the prophecies foretell the time when paradise will be reestablished on the earth. And so we have to follow suit. For some reason, the evil ones are still just hanging on, you know, by the skin of their teeth to this this game called, you know, control and government and etc. It's an illusion, it's a delusion, and it's falsehood, and it will come down like a, you know, like a house of cards, you know, in 1 hour, as the scriptures say. Babylon, woe to Babylon, and it has fallen in 1 hour. It's fallen because supposedly in history, you know, Babylon was defeated in 1 hour. The waters of the Euphrates were diverted, and you know, Cyrus the great liberator. Cyrus would be Osiris, of course, Orion, Osiris. You know, delivered the Jews, God's people, in other words, spiritual people, from physical bondage and from slavery. And so, this commercial system of slavery called Rome. And the crown, the triple crown, which would be convocation, attorney regis, and Pontifex Maximus, the three papal bulls created in the 15 and 1600s, rather the 14 and 1500s, they'll be defunct. You know, they already are, and their influence will cease forever. It'll be a pile of dung in the desert where jackals and serpents and scorpions abide.
Well, they'll feel right at home.
Yeah, they are. Well, these entities are jackals. They're vampires, hyenas, vultures. They're scavengers, parasites. They're pernicious. They're pillagers. They're plunderers. As the great Tacitus once wrote, "The Romans are deadly pillagers of the world. They have exhausted the earth with their indiscriminate plunder. A rich enemy excites their lust for wealth, a poor one their craving for power. Robbery, butchery, and rape they call government. They create a desert and call it peace." Have a look around. See if you don't see all that happening right now. That's Tacitus, 2,000 years ago. Quoting the Caledonian king. of course, because all of these countries that were raped, Julius Caesar murdered a million Celtic French. Then they massacred all the Iberian Peninsula and overtook that, annexed it. Then, of course, they raped Boudicca's two daughters in front of her when they went to England and took over that little Londinian enterprise, the Corporation of London, which is one of Rome's little children, prostitutes. Of course, they raped and pillaged the Goths and the Vandals and all of those nations. And then, of course, they sent forth the so-called Columbus the Murderer, which was just a corporation of the Vatican, call it, I don't know, Templars, I suppose, or Knights, an order of Knights. And they went and raped the Americas. They came to this country and destroyed the Aboriginal culture. And all in the name, of course, of this Christendom, the dome, the kingdom of Christ. This is not the true Christ that dwells in our hearts, the Christ consciousness. This is the Church of Peter. Peter is Petra, stone. The Church of Stone. You see, when you go to Rome, you see a lot of buildings made of stone, and they call it the Christian Church. Well, that's the Church of Petra. Upon this church I will build my, upon this rock mass I will build my church. Whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. So, of course, the corporate church that collects Peter's pence based on the donation of Constantine. This is the bull, the papal bull, or the contract in which mankind have been enslaved. It's the basis of all the other papal bulls in existence. And they collect Peter's pence for the Church of Petra so that they can build their empire of stone. But see, we're not made of stone, we're made of spirit. And everything is spirit. The material world is just another version, another condition of spirit. But those who place all their hopes and treasures in that part of temporal existence will lose the other part. And it's a choice we all have to make. I know I'm on the path, and I will never be moved away from the path. I know the right path to be on, and I'll speak it forth forever on the rooftops. And no one will be able to shut this voice up, Vinny. And I know the same applies to you, brother. That's why I'm on this show with you.
Well, I thank you very much as well for coming on the show today, bro. And I was talking with James Wright, who's blowing the whistle on the Freemasons, and we both came to this realization that a place with peace and bliss and all of that kind of thing, because we've all been fighting so long and been so damaged by the fight itself, there's no place for us there.
Yeah, yep. See, the big think tanks of the elite, you know, call it the Club of Rome, the Bilderbergers, all of these criminals, they engage the chattel, the sheeple, in useless chasing after the wind scam projects like, you know, global warming, and we have to do something to save the earth and the animals and this and that and whatever, you know, and give your money to cancer research, not cancer cures and real healing, just treatments, so we can collect it forever and ever and ever. And so, you know, you got all these people, you know, doing 10-mile walks and to raise money for this and that, and just to put more money in the Rothschilds' pockets. They haven't got enough. They've shed about, I don't know, 3 billion lives of blood since the Napoleonic Wars, World War One, World War Two, and they don't have enough royal palaces all around the planet with gold taps and ivory and marble, all whilst, you know, two-thirds of the world's population are starving to death and sick and malnourished, and poverty is increasing. But of course, their royal palaces keep getting fatter and bigger and everything like that, because everybody gives to the Salvation Army, which is run by the Rothschilds, Red Cross, which is another word for Rothschild, Red Cross, Roth being red and child meaning shield, you know, red shield appeal, hello, and people just, you know, pull out this blood money cash and just give it back to them. And of course, that cash has no value at all. It's stained with blood, but it makes the pockets of the Rothschilds and the Vatican families a lot richer. So there's a lot of chasing after the wind, but let them go. These are the fools who wish to live in such a way, and they will have to learn eventually, who knows, in another 600 or 700 lives of suffering that they have to go through until they learn to get on the path. Cramped and narrow is the path that leads to everlasting life. Broad and spacious is the road leading off to perdition, and many are the ones who are on it.
I think that, you know, a lot of the time you have to go through these sort of struggles alone. You know, you don't have a bit of support, and I think sometimes that independent streak needs to be nourished by having its own time to grow, but also, sometimes it can be greatly threatened by complete and total isolation, especially if not asking for help and things like that. I found a lot of people who need help are just too proud to ask for it, or they don't believe that they'd get it. When they do ask for help and they get it, it surprises them.
Yep, absolutely. There is a kind of an isolation feeling there, but of course, if we just remember that we are eternal, that we are all that is, that was, and ever will be, and that we are connected directly to Source, once we acknowledge that Source and devote ourselves to that Source, then we are never alone. There's only the now, it's eternal, and we have everything we need right now, everything that we need, and as we add to that knowing, then we will see how the universe just keeps putting things at the right time in front of us for us to enjoy and to use in the service of truth, in the service of our brothers. And nothing greater is that calling than to heed that call to serve truth. And, people that like to make truth a word think that it's subjective, you know, that it's subject to conditions. No, no. Truth is a being. It is the being that permeates the whole universe. The universe is truth. Toth. Thoth. Truth. And there is only truth. If we want to, we can be deluded by falsehood, temporal falsehood, but there's only truth. Service to truth.
That's right. Santos Bonacci, ladies and gentlemen, universaltruthschool.com is his website. Be wary of the pernicious pillaging parasites plundering Peter's pence for the Church of Petra on the road to perdition, by the way. I'll send that to you, actually, bro. You could, I don't know, put that on a bumper sticker or something.
Hallelujah.
thanks for spending an hour with me, mate.
My pleasure, brother.
All right. Have a wonderful day. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. We'll be right back next hour with Max Egan. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? However, sometimes when you're actually in a deep, bad situation and you actually literally are being exterminated, doesn't appear that funny, does it? However, even in those situations, the people who are being oppressed, the people who are being subjugated, can make these little funny things happen amidst all the darkness and keep it at bay. My very special guest today is from thecrowhouse.com, Max Egan, also from Australia. Max, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny, nice to be with you again, brother. Thanks for asking me on.
What have you been up to, mate?
Busy, busy, busy doing my show. I actually just finished my show. Having a break for a while. I've got a whole bunch of talks that I have to do. I've got a next couple of weeks is absolute chaos. I've got to go to Melbourne on the weekend to do a talk down there and meet up with Ken O'Keefe, who's doing a talk down there as well. It'll be his first time in Australia. And then Ken and I are attending a wedding down there. Then we're both coming back up here to do the Freedom Summits the following weekend. We got a couple of radio interviews to do in the FM station in between now and then as well. So a pretty hectic week. But I've just been doing what I've been doing and doing the shows and keeping on keeping on. I've been to Peru quite a bit. Intend to go back there in late November, early December, and probably be there for at least a year working on a new film. So that's the plans for the future and what I'm doing at the present.
Sounds absolutely insanely busy.
It is. It's ridiculous, Vinny. It's absolutely ridiculous. I've been running a pretty hectic workload. Get an hour or two here and there. But it's all good. I mean, it's just stuff that needs to be done. So that's what we do. We do what needs to be done.
Well, in fact, I found that was interesting as well as if you just do what needs to be done, you'll find there's more work to be done than you could ever do.
That's the problem. That's the problem, you know. Even when you start on this journey of doing radio and waking people up and trying to change things, you know, it becomes a 24-hour job 7 days a week. You just don't get a break because, you know, the powers that believe they be don't really have days off. And there's, you know, those who are working against it, aren't, you know, we are few in numbers compared to them. And so it's a full-time job. It really is. And that's the problem as well. I mean, once you wake up to reality and you start speaking out and telling people what's going on, well, how do you stop? I mean, how can you just put it down and go back to just doing other things, you know, while you know all this is happening around you and people need to be aware of it? So it becomes a matter of necessity and really a matter of urgency as well, I think. I mean, I think the human race is facing a clear and present danger from the powers that believe they be, and we need to call it out for what it is and do something about it. And I think we have every opportunity to do so. I think we can even do it within the parameters of the system if we're sensible about it. You know, we can do it in a way that's non-violent anyway. We can do it in a way that's non-confrontational. Just simply call things out and stand together and stand as one and stop complying with this system, you know.
Well, as you've famously said, we don't need a resistance. We need a response.
We do. That's the problem. See, even the term resistance is a loaded term, isn't it? You know, you're resisting the inevitable. You know, it's a full spectrum attack that we're under, you know, in a strive for full spectrum dominance, you know, by their own words. And so what we need is a full spectrum response. So I'm not resisting anything. I'm responding, and I suggest people do the same. And that's what we're doing with Full Circle Project. That's why we've set that up so we can link everybody up and find out what people's responses are and what's working and form support groups for people in their own community and, you know, groups of like-minded people that can get together and discuss all this and form action groups on the ground in their own communities of things that matter to their own local community, use the system against itself and basically bring it to a grinding halt if we play our cards right. You know, we can do this. You know, we can do it. There are so many things happening in the world now that give us the opportunity to call everything out for what it is. And even with the whole war on terror and what's going on in the Middle East, I mean, it looks like the wheels are falling off it in many ways. You know, the US and Israel and all the Western interests, you know, involved in ISIS and all this are all becoming very, very exposed to everybody. It's becoming obvious to people now. Now you see ISIS driving around in you know, US Humvees and driving, you know, Abram tanks and stuff. And you start, you know, putting two and two together and realize that this is a proxy war that's being fought here. In fact, the whole war on terror is. The entire war on terror is basically a proxy war that Israel is waging against the Islamic countries in the Middle East that it wants to take over for the Greater Israel Project. And that's what it is. That's where all the instability in the region is. And it's all coming from Israel, the whole lot. It's been coming from America, but it's becoming from dual citizens within America. And people are starting to realize that that's what the war on terror is. It's a proxy war for Greater Israel. And that's what it's been since day one. And I think the world is waking up to it. And that's why I think Putin's doing what he's doing as well. He's just realizing, I mean, you know, he's sat on the back lines for a while and played the boogeyman, but he's just looking at it and saying, look, this is a mess. And what you're doing now with all this refugee stuff into Europe, you're actually threatening Russia's borders by bringing all of these migrants, you know, right to our doorstep. So, you know, the whole destabilization of Europe, this is not in Russia's best interests. And, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean Putin's a good guy. He's just doing what's sensible for his country. But, you know, just the fact that he's been able to go in and basically decimate ISIS in a matter of a few days, when America apparently couldn't do it in a matter of a few years, has kind of shown people that America wasn't really trying. America was actually funding all of these. And when you say that, saying America's doing it, you've got to look at the who controls American foreign policy and who the real influences are. And you find that they're all dual Israeli citizens. So, you know, you've got to put two and two together and look at how this is all being played. And I think it's being exposed to the world for what it is. And people are really beginning to question the government and question the system, which is why our governments are doing what they can to ramp things up, and the media's, you know, continuing with its mindless babble. But, you know, I think people are waking up. I think it's becoming obvious to people, Vinny. And so, you know, it's about time we did something about it. It's just coordinating the correct response and figuring out what it is we should actually do.
Have you noticed how people get into these endless questioning cycles? Like, how could people be this stupid? How could people not see it? When you already know that there's huge brainwashing mechanisms and the media's controlled and all of that kind of stuff, you know the answers to these questions, but you keep asking to yourself because of the sheer disbelief of it. And I think the disbelief is actually triggered by the fact that you don't really want to believe that people are this stupid and this easily manipulated, that the media is this well controlled, you know. And I think, what's it going to take, you know, before people realize that there's a military-industrial complex that is supporting ISIS? You know, like ISIS comes out with a new aircraft carrier or something, and then people go, whoa, hold on a second, how did they get that?
Yeah, well, it'll probably take something like that. I mean, look at them at the moment. They've got these U.S. Humvees. They're all using AR-15s and M-16s, all U.S. weapons. They've got U.S. rocket launchers. They've got Israeli medical supplies. They've got howitzers and stuff like this. They've got 30 Abrams tanks, American Abrams tanks. How the hell does a terrorist organization get a hold of 30 tanks from the United States? I mean, can you put two and two together here, folks? I mean, look at all of this. This is this army that was formed, you know, basically when they overthrew Syria. They brought all these mercs into Syria. They funded them. They trained them. They gave them all these weapons. And then they just came straight across over into Syria from Libya. I don't know whether I said Libya to start with there, but they did it all in Libya to overthrow Gaddafi. And they all came straight across into Syria. They trained the army in Libya and in Turkey, and they brought them all into Syria. This is a proxy army that the U.S. has been funding that's destabilizing the entire region. If you look at every country, it's all part of the Greater Israel Project. There's even been large Israeli magnates and wealthy Israelis buying land in northern Iraq already, because this is all within the boundaries of Greater Israel, which is going to go from the east bank of the Nile to the west bank of the Euphrates. This is what they've said under their own doctrines and their own guidelines, and this is what they're doing. And you know, the people well, are waking up to it. People see it.
That's what the Israeli flag is, those two blue lines with the Star of David in the middle. That's the borders, the Tigris and the Euphrates and the whole state of Israel. That's what it's supposed to be. Now, that will mean conquering quite a few independent countries. They've already managed to conquer one. Thank you for the Balfour Declaration, of course.
Well, they haven't conquered it yet. They're doing the best they can. It's kind of open season on Palestinians at the moment. The violence that is erupting there, I mean, Israel is just pushing as hard as they can in the West Bank. They're going in there and terrorizing the people in the mosques. And, so the people in Gaza are getting, you know, are pretty annoyed and offended and responding and throwing rocks at Israelis over the fence because of what they're doing to their brothers and sisters in West Bank, which is a matter of 20 miles away that they can't even get to. And most of them have even got family members there because they're all separated, you know. So, you know, it's really, really open season there at the moment. And Benjamin Netanyahu has said it's okay to use live firing against anyone who throws rocks. And you're using sniper fire against children, live rounds against children who are throwing rocks. And you imagine being a Palestinian. You imagine living in a place. You imagine living in West Bank and you have these soldiers come in with armed bulldozers. They bulldoze your house, they shoot your parents, and then you pick up a rock and throw it at a soldier or a tank, and you get taken out by a sniper. You know, you're not even allowed to throw a rock. You're not even allowed to hold a Palestinian flag. You just have to sit there and watch all this happening, and not only does the world look on and not even pay attention to it, but they fund it, and they support this terrorism from this rogue state. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I believe Palestine is one of the biggest opportunities we have in the world for freedom. I really do. Because every problem we're facing in all of our countries, Vinny, all of these laws that are coming in, all these austerity measures, the fracking. Look, there's an area here in Australia up in Chinchilla, 314 square miles, that is completely polluted. All the groundwater is polluted. This is in the middle of our food bowl. And our government has allowed this to happen. All of these things that are happening all around the world, these are all the result of legislation that has been enacted by politicians that we employ to office. And almost every one of these Western politicians is funding and supporting the state of Israel, and Israel is openly carrying out war crimes. The very existence of Gaza Strip is a war crime. Forget about the fact that they drop white phosphorus on them. Forget about the fact that they kidnap their children. They shoot their children. They bulldoze their houses. They steal their crops. They, you know, do all the things they do. They bomb their hospitals, bomb their ambulances, bomb their schools. Forget about all of these crimes that they do. The mere existence of Gaza Strip is collective punishment and therefore constitutes a war crime under Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. Therefore, every politician in the Western world who is supporting or funding the state of Israel is guilty of funding and supporting war crimes and should be arrested and taken to The Hague immediately. And if we do that, we knock the whole food chain out. We take them all out, and all of this corrupt legislation that they put in place to allow them to destroy our countries and our lives the way they're doing can be rolled back, because they're all a bunch of criminals, a lot of them. Every single politician in the Western world who is funding or supporting Israel is a criminal, a war criminal, because they are supporting war crimes by proxy. And I recommend that everybody withdraw all support from any government member or any government who is funding or supporting the state of Israel. The people of Australia and New Zealand, go find a form somewhere that makes you tax exempt for whatever reason you do. You can give your boss and say, listen, I'm going to take care of my taxes from now on. I'll sort it out with the government. You don't need to take it out of my pay. And then write to the government and tell the government that you will not give them any taxes until they can show you why they are supporting this war crime. And if they cannot show you why they are supporting this war crime, you intend to take action against them and have them prosecuted for war crimes and stop this human rights violation from happening and stop this system in its tracks and stop it from doing what they're doing. You know, we've got to stop complying with these criminals that are running this world into the ground, Vinny. And Gaza is the perfect opportunity for us to do it. It's an open war crime being supported and funded by thousands of criminal politicians around this planet.
There's many things to do. Gaza's absolutely one of the biggest and most open issues out there that could be seized upon in order to get people to see liberty and freedom. Other people, sometimes, like a friend of mine, he does it in his own way. Like, he hasn't paid taxes for a number of years. He's figured out a way around it in the system, and he's also drawing a government benefit. Somebody said to him, well, you're just stealing the government's money then. And he goes, well, they started it.
Well, yeah. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the government, you know, makes everybody pay to be alive. It should cover that cost for everybody. As far as I'm concerned, the government should cover the basic cost of living for everybody, because it's the one who makes them pay. You know, it could end the private issuance of currency. That would be a good start. It could stop supporting a corrupt criminal international banking cartel and end the private issuance of currency and end the system of debt slavery that we live in, and we would be in a far better place. So all the government does is steal. So, yeah, I mean, they should fund it all, because they're the ones who created.
I love the people who are, like, paying the taxes, who, like, come up and go, oh, you're not paying your taxes, you know, you're not paying your way. It's like, I'm not paying criminal bankers the interest of the debt on them. So hold on a second, let me get this straight, bro. You're paying criminal bankers money, and this gives you some kind of moral authority over me?
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? That's the problem. People think that taxes pay for infrastructure. They don't. They go off to pay the government's interest on a loan to a private bank that shouldn't exist for in the first place. And they say we've got to do all this stuff to pay off the national debt. Who do we owe the national debt to? It's the same banking cartel that prints the money. It's the Rothschilds. It's the richest people on the planet who've become that way out of exploiting millions upon millions of people. They've got the blood of literally millions on their hands. And this is who we owe the debt to, is it? Because you choose to borrow money from this private bank rather than coin it yourself, which you have the right to do because you're government, for God's sake. You know? So, I mean, let's really put this in perspective, shall we? You want to pay off the national debt? Go and mint a big coin. And how much is the national debt? Like 100 billion? Well, go and mint a big coin, make it out of silver so it's got value, and write 100 billion on it and go and give it to the Rothschilds. There you go. Debt's paid. That's all they need to do.
Exactly. Here's your money. Now get out of my life. And I think that one person showed me a clip from an interview I did with Thomas Sheridan this one time, And he said the one and only defense against psychopaths is to get them out of your life, right? And as far as I'm concerned, these bankers are psychopathic in nature, and if it's not the individuals running them, it's certainly the institutions that they're working for that is behaving in such a way, and the only way to win is to no longer feed them, to no longer be their victim, to no longer be in their presence, to no longer be under their influence. You can't kick them out. You have to walk away.
Well, you do. That's the thing. And that's why we've got to walk away from this system. Bit of a cough.
That sounds great.
We've got to walk away from this system. No, I've had a bit of a chest cold lately. Bit of a chest cough.
He has a lot of that going around as well. I went round to see a mate of mine the other night, and he had the flu real bad.
Yeah. No, it's just not a flu. It's just a chest cough. But anyway, no. But we've got to comply. Stop complying with this system, Vinny. We do. But the only way we can do that is by calling it out. You know, and there are elements within the system we can use, like Gaza, like the fact that every single politician, if they're standing in breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention and they're supporting a war crime, what makes any of the legislation they're bringing in place valid? You know, I mean, look at this new guy we've got in our prime minister. What's his Malcolm Turnbull? You know, Malcolm Turdful. He should be called, because let's face it, he's full of shit. But anyway,
you got a new prime minister already. Oh my god, I'm going to just lose.
Yeah, Tony Abbott got kicked out, and Malcolm Turnbull got put in.
Do they even have elections in Australia anymore, or do they just have like backstabbing stuff that happens between politicians between elections that determines the new government?
Yeah, that's kind of the way it goes here. It's just all of this sort of stuff. You know, you vote for someone, and they just replace him with whoever they want down the track. Once they've got the first sociopath to go in there and really pave the way and really make a complete mess and do all the stuff they actually wanted to do, they get him out so that he's not culpable. Yeah. And they put in the next puppet who they wanted, which happens to be a Zionist ex-banker, so he looks really good for the country, you know.
Oh, fantastic, but, mate. You know, what could possibly
openly,
go wrong?
He openly supports Israel, and he went through with Tony Abbott's, the previous imbecile's policy of going and bombing Syria, and we can prove that all ISIS is being funded and all of these whole terrorist things are all being run by Israel and the United States, so he's going and supporting the war crime of this bombing of Syria, so he's an interesting sort of a character. He's managed to become a war criminal within 24 hours of becoming an unelected prime minister. That's got to be some sort of a record.
Well, I don't know. We'll call Guinness and we'll see if we can get him some kind of award, you know. What kind of shape would you have a war criminal award for, you know?
I don't know.
Maybe like a little gold bomb or something like that, you know, like a shell.
Yeah, a little turd there with a little flag in it or something, you know. Like,
yeah.
That'd be good. That's what he deserves, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of a name would you come up with? Some kind of ceremony for this? I think, you know, something
you could call it the Megalohippocromania Award.
Mm. You know, like, something that rolls off the tongue like the Oscars, like the
I don't know what you'd call it. I don't know.
Moving on.
Megalohippocromania, that's an interesting word, mate. Ken and I came up with that one. We figure the hypocrisy of the government is so profound that the word hypocrisy doesn't even define the level of hypocrisy we see from these people. So they're kind of megalomaniacs and they're hypocrites. So we figured megalohypocromania is what it is. This is what we're seeing from these people.
Yeah, I still prefer the term scumbaggery, because scumbaggery implies a kind of infinite amount of scumbaggery.
Well, that's true. That's true. They are absolute bags of scum, mate. But we've got to do something about it. And I think our best option is to call it out. We really do. Everybody's got to start calling things out for what they are and start questioning these people. Why you owe allegiance or should pay a penny or offer any support to any politician who is supporting an open war crime. You know, look at Palestine. Look at Gaza. Forget whether it's Israelis battling Palestinians or Muslims battling Jews. And by the way, it isn't Muslims battling Jews, because 35% of the population in Gaza are Christian. And think about that. And the average age in Gaza Strip is 17. Now, 1.8 million people, the average age of 17. And this is who Israel is waging its so-called war against. It's not war. It's the slaughter of children. If these children even pick up a rock to use as self-defense, they get taken out by a sniper now, legal under the Israeli terrorist government's new law. You know, and our governments are supporting and funding this war crime. So you want to stop the fracking in your country? You want to stop the austerity measures. You want to stop them bringing in the basics card for pensioners that they want to bring in here, and all these crimes that these megalomaniacal Zionist scumbags are doing. You want to take them all out in one go. Call this war crime for Gaza out for what it is. Step into your humanity and look at what Gaza is. It's a humanitarian catastrophe, and the siege of Gaza is a siege against humanity. It's a crime against humanity. Forget whether they're Palestinians or Muslims or Jews or whatever they are. They are people, mainly children, that are being held in collective punishment, an open war crime being supported by our governments. Call it out, folks. Call it out for what it is. Stop giving these people any support until they stop funding this war crime. And don't only not just give them support, but rally the people to hold these criminals accountable for their actions. Take them to the Hague. All of these people need to be taken to the Hague, and they need to be hung. They really do. They're a bunch of criminals, and I'm sick to death of this war and devastation and chaos they are creating around this beautiful world that we have. Now, it's all being done by these politicians, and it's time we stood up and called it out.
And we're not talking about something that's like our opinion or whatever, ladies and gentlemen. When we say war crimes, we're talking about a massive list of things that have actually been taken to the United Nations and are down on papers, like the most war crimes in history, more than all other countries combined, belong to Israel. As we speak, more are being committed and not all of them are being reported, so you can kind of extrapolate from there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's going on. And, you know, if we don't deal with this, then the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. And you look at Gaza, Gaza won't last past 2020. You know, the situation there is so bad now. And, you know, we'll be lucky if it lasts that long. You know, so we've got a few years to turn this around. And this is calling out for humanity to pay attention. And if we deal with this issue, we deal with the entire control grid in one fell swoop. That is the level of opportunity this provides for us. But it's got to be the people to do it and stand up and call it out. Don't expect the United Nations to do it. The United Nations is a puppet show. The United Nations is a dictatorship. It's a group of like 186 countries that are controlled by five countries who've given the power of veto and basically dictate what happens everywhere else. The United Nations is an absolute joke. It's a toothless tiger.
What they do is they sit there and report on the war crimes, and then the five powerful countries that are committing the war crimes get to veto the action so the war crimes don't get prosecuted.
Exactly. What is this? This isn't the United Nations at all. They just hold everybody under the threat of sanctions and under the threat of war and just do what we say because we're the bullies. That's what the United Nations is. It's an absolute joke.
We're united by the threat of sanctions, you know, and war.
Exactly, and there's been more conflicts on this earth since the United Nations was formed than there was in all the previous history up to that point. There's been more conflicts. There's been over 300 conflicts since the United Nations was formed. There wasn't 300 wars in the history of the world previous to that. You know, so people need to wake up and smell the coffee, and the only people who are going to fix it is us. We have to call this out for what it is. And we can openly call out all of our governments for war crimes right now because they are all funding and supporting them simply because Gaza Strip exists. And that is a huge opportunity for mankind if we choose to stand up and call it out. And I recommend everybody withdraw any support from this government, any funding from this government, withhold your taxes, don't vote. Don't vote until you're given a politician who's honest. Don't vote until the politician makes his election promises and puts them on paper and signs his name to them as an affidavit so that if he breaks those promises, he can be removed from power and held accountable for his actions. Because these politicians make all these promises, they get to power and they break every one of them and they push the same agenda forward. Oh, yeah, politicians break the promises. We just expect them to do that. Oh, it's a scandal. No, it's not a scandal. It's a crime. The guy's a barefaced liar who was given a position that he has no right to hold because he was given it under false pretenses because he made promises he had no intention of keeping. And that is the honest truth of the matter. So let's call these criminals out. I'm sick to death of it, Vinny. I really am. And I might seem a little angry today, but it's because of what is happening in Gaza right now. I've got a lot of friends over there. I've got a lot of friends in Palestine. And there's been like something like 22 or 26 kids killed just in the first week of October in Palestine by Israeli forces. Kids as young as 2, as 11, 13 years old, been shot by these snipers. I've got camera footage of a kid that someone took on their phone. You know, this kid with two broken legs and a bullet hole in him, and the settlers are screaming at him to die. Die, you little bitch, you know. This is a kid. He must be 7 years old. This is the mentality of these people, and this is what your government is funding. So I say remove all funding from these war criminals immediately and call them out and let's stop this madness.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of, like, a little psychopathic following kind of going on there. So as far as I know, in Israel, you've kind of got, like, a requirement. You have to become a member of the rabbi school, or you have to become a member of the Israeli Defense Force. So basically all the citizens will in some way be indoctrinated into that kind of mentality. You know, it's pretty nasty. Yeah. And yet, even despite that, there's still record amounts of, like, protests and things like that against the government and what they're doing to the people of Palestine. But, of course, government doesn't listen because the government doesn't care, and it's just full of lying politicians.
There are a lot of Israelis and a lot of Jews who are absolutely outraged at the actions of the Israeli government, saying, this isn't anything about hatred of Jews at all, because there are so many Jews who agree with what I'm saying. Because this is ridiculous. This is absolutely absurd. The level of brutality that we're seeing from these people, these IDF soldiers, and, you know, even calling it the IDF, this is the way Israel does it. It speaks in backwards all the time. The Israeli Defense Force. There's nothing defensive about it. It's the Israeli Offense Force, and they carry out aggression against all of their neighboring states constantly under the guise of self-defense. And that's exactly what they're doing in Palestine. Now, there was even last week, they filmed a bunch of Israelis dressed up like Palestinians going in there and inciting Palestinian kids to throw rocks so they could be shot by snipers. This is the sort of thing they do. They get over the fence into Gaza. They fire a couple of rockets over so that Israel will go and bomb Gaza. You know, this is what the Israelis do. They do it all the time. They set these people up, and they send a Jean provocateurs in there to stir them up, and then they create all the trouble themselves. And they say, oh, no, we're just defending ourselves against constant Palestinian violence. But like I said, what happens? You go and bulldoze someone's house and kill their parents. They throw a rock at you. You say, oh, the Palestinians are being violent. And you go in and shoot them all. And that's the way the media reports it, is that, oh, it's these Palestinians acting up again. Because the media is controlled by the same people. Now, we've got to wake up and smell the coffee, and we've got to call this out. Yeah, because, like I said, Vinny, it's just an opportunity. We can stop every single crime these politicians are doing by addressing this one issue. This is the greatest opportunity for mankind that we've ever had, because it's open and it's in everybody's face. The entire world knows about the problem with Israel and Palestine. And we need to look at this, see it for what it is. Well, and it isn't a war against two countries. It's the one country. They say there isn't any apartheid in Israel. You've got to understand, Israel and Palestine is the one country. If there's no apartheid, why is there a wall around Jerusalem and a wall around Gaza? That's pretty apartheid, you know?
Well, there was a great poster campaign during the 80s when New Zealanders were protesting against apartheid South Africa during the rugby season, right? And it had a black side of the paper, a white side of the paper, and then a big line down the middle in blood. And it said, it's pronounced apartheid.
Mm.
Yeah. Very powerful image, right? And those kind of simple slogans and things like that. I've been thinking about this quite a lot lately, Max, about marketing, basically. You know how we're kind of anti-marketing because it's sort of corrupted everything. Can such an evil tool ever be used for good, you know?
Well, it can in the right way. This is why we've labeled Full Circle Project Full Spectrum Response rather than Resistance. And I thought of Resistance. I said Full Spectrum Resistance, and it was Zen Gardner said to me, no, Max, Response. And I went, oh, that's beautiful. You're such a wordsmith, you know. He's a beautiful man, Zen Gardner. And he suggested response, and so that's what we went with, and that's what it is. That's what we needed, because resistance is a loaded term. You know, as soon as he said that to me, I went, wow, it is such a loaded term. As soon as he said, no, we don't need resistance, we need response, I went, oh, my God, I've been using a loaded term. And I thought about what resistance is. Resistance is identifying that which is inevitable and resisting it for as long as you can. But this prison system that they're bringing in is not inevitable at all. You know, and we can use marketing in the right way if we get to the right people by, you know, good video clips, you know, catchy video clips that tell the truth. There was a great one that I saw the other day that I'm going to use in my upcoming talk called ISIS, America's Mercenary Army, which is a very good clip. It doesn't really point out the Israeli arm that's actually controlling America that's doing it, but it's a very, very powerful clip that basically lays it all out for people. So things like that, I mean, that form of marketing we can use, you know, it's just getting it to the people. Unfortunately, most people still get their main news from television, from people that they trust, you know, they like that reporter, he looks nice, she looks nice, whatever. They feel like they're friends with these people, and they trust them when they tell them things, and they trust these reporters to keep them informed. and they just don't. You know, it all comes from the one source, and it's all towing the government line. The media doesn't report the news anymore, you know, but they have all these shows that look like they're reporting the news, you know, 60 Minutes and all of these news interview shows and talk shows on SBS or ABC or whatever that look very official and look very informative, but they don't really tell anybody anything. So, you know, and people trust this because they've grown up with it and they've been told by these sources as well that you can't trust anything on the internet. And when these people go to the internet, they find, you know, all sorts of sites that have all conflicting stories. They don't know where the truth is. And, of course, they've made sure that the internet is saturated with pornography as well. So they don't want to go there. They don't want their kids going there. They want all this protection on there. They want all these sites blocked. And you find that a lot of the sites that are giving truthful news and stuff will get blocked with the porn sites and all this sort of stuff. So there's ways of doing it, you know. And also they've managed to gain a pretty good map of the human terrain by, you know, looking at search engine results and social media chats. And now when they look at search engine results and they collect data of these things, like Google collects all the data of all the searches people are doing, it isn't just what people are searching for, it's what people are thinking about. It's what the whole human consciousness is thinking about. And you get this and you correlate it with the chats that they're having on social media and the chats they're having on their mobile phones. And they link it all up together. So your phone is linked up to Facebook, linked up to YouTube, linked up to this, to that. So they can get a cross-section. Okay, well, he's got these friends on Facebook and these on YouTube and these ones are on his phone. So we know who his real circles are and who his internet circles are. We know where he goes because we can track his mobile phone. It sends out a GPS beep every 8 seconds or something. So we know where everybody's going. We know who's interacting with who. And now we can process all the data and we can get a pretty comprehensive map of the human terrain. So now we digitize everything. We digitize currency. We get everybody in these phones. So everything's on your phone. It's all paid for by cards. And not many people use cash anymore. So, and it costs a couple of cents to do this, a couple of cents to do that. You put a dollar value or economic value on everything. And then pretty soon you've got this entire smart system put in place. And then you develop this AI technology to go with it. And you've got this whole technocratic system, this whole technological environment that has basically mapped the human terrain, knows exactly what's going on, knows who's interacting with who. They've identified where all the dissident groups are. And the AI has just got to say, okay, well, That alternative community over there run by Vinnie Eastwood, we've designated them as a threat to government. So they're a terrorist organization. So we'll just send out a message to this group over here to go out and take out this cell. And the group will do what it's told to do because the orders came from HQ. And so they don't know anything. They just know they got to go in there, they got to take out this cell, and they got to protect their buddies. That's what they do.
Is it wrong that I like being referred to as a cell?
But you know what I'm saying? This is the way they could play it. And this is what is being rolled out around everybody while they're not paying attention. They're all looking at all these conspiracy theories and they're looking at all this sort of stuff. And while this is happening, and of course they're sending all these refugees into Europe to destabilize all of Europe, bring them here, stage a few terror attacks, bring in this whole police state. Of course, we're going to have to digitize currency so the terrorists can't use it. You know, all this sort of, yeah, there's all these ways they can do it. You know, and we end up in this AI system, this AI control system, and that's really where we're heading. And we can nip it all in the bud. We can nip the whole thing in the bud by, again, addressing Gaza, addressing that, because that's the one thing that can take out the entire global elite right around the world. You know, all the corporations, all the banks, everything that funds all this. This is a war crime. It's an open war crime, and it gives us an opportunity. If people can put down the barrier that they seem to have between, you know, who's right and who's wrong in this conflict, and whether it's Muslims against Jews and all this sort of stuff, forget about all of that and look at a humanitarian level. And what you see is that it's collective punishment of people, mainly children, that are all being funded by Western governments. That's basically what it is. We can sort out the differences between Israel and Palestine later, but we have to free these children from this hellhole that they're living in. And it's an opportunity for us. It's an opportunity for us to step into our humanity, Vinny. You know, I mean, this is a crime against humanity of massive proportions, and it's the greatest opportunity we've got. We can address the AI grid. We can address all of this stuff by nipping this whole system in the bud, by identifying every one of these criminals that are running all of this scam and removing them from office straight away legally under their own laws, fictional as it is, you know. I mean, all the stuff that they give us to go along with, Vinny, all the tax laws, all the laws that they give us, these are all just stuff they write on paper. Well, okay, if you're going to inflict your paper-based reality on me, if anything that's been written on paper is real and law, well, okay, there's this piece of paper here that says that what you guys are doing is a war crime, And so therefore, that needs to be addressed before I will even look at any of the other stuff you guys have written down at all. Because how can it have any validity if you are allowing this catastrophe to continue, this humanitarian catastrophe to continue? You know, the situation there could be healed in a day if people would pay attention to it. And, you know, that's what we need to do. And you know, I can't think of a better thing to cause people to step into their humanity. That's why I share so much about Palestine. I mean, I post some pretty horrific stuff sometimes on my Facebook page for people to see because, and I know it probably upsets them and I've probably scared a lot of people off coming to my page and all sorts of stuff and people are thinking, oh, Max has gone all negative or whatever. But what I want people to see is that these are children. This is your brothers and sisters who are being brutalized by funding that's coming from your government. And if you want to address every single problem in your life all at once, then you need to address this issue because addressing this issue can address all of the other problems. And all you need to do to address it is to just open your heart and step into humanity and look what is being done to these children. I don't know, it's upsetting, Vinny. It's upsetting, mate. And it's so simple and it's so obvious. And we need to pay attention to it. And we need to promote this idea to people. I really think it will help. You know.
Well, you're in a war zone mentality, right? Where you actually do have a very visible enemy that has to be counteracted. The problem is that fighting against enemies, they always have you in their sights as well as soon as you go up and attack them. And this whole fear complex, I think it's got people kind of caught in its grasp. They're so afraid to act. They're so afraid to speak up. Did you ever experience that? I mean, because I'd never really experienced a time when I was really afraid to speak up about things. And so mm-hmm. It doesn't register for me. Why you wouldn't do it.
Mate, I got kicked out of four high schools for arguing with my teachers. So, you know, now I've never been afraid to speak up.
I got suspended 17 times from the same high school.
Yeah. I got kept back a grade when I was in primary school because I was non-cooperative in my class.
That was in my last year of high school.
That was in a grade three or four. I got kept back because I was just completely uncooperative. And then when I realized that, okay, this is what they're going to do, okay, I better cooperate a little bit. So I'd sort of scrape through every year. And then when I got to high school, I just started arguing with the teachers all the time because I didn't like what they were teaching me. I didn't agree with what they were teaching me. And so I got kicked out of four schools in 2.5 years and basically gave up at that point. So I don't need this anyway. So I went off and became a guitar player.
As you do.
Well, yeah, it worked for me. I mean, I was sitting halfway through my exams in my third year of high school, and I just thought, why am I here? At that stage, I had my own desk outside the principal's office because no class would have me. So I used to come and they used to bring my lessons and put them on my desk. I'm just sitting there halfway through a maths test or something, and I just thought, why am I even doing this, you know? So I just got up and I went home. And I told my father that I was in Adelaide at the time. I went home and I said to my father, look, I finished school for the year. I'd like to go to Queensland to visit Mum for tomorrow. So he put me on an airplane at 7 a.m. the next morning because he ran the airport, so he was able to do that. And by the time I got to Queensland, the school was on the phone to him ringing up saying, where's your son? Why isn't he here for the exam? So he was on the phone to my mother when I arrived in Queensland telling me to get on a flight and come straight back home, which I didn't, and never looked back from that point.
Well, you kind of have to do what actually sits right with you, right? And I found that too my entire life. I've just been going through it and going through it and going through it and always having to be subordinate to some other person and always have somebody telling me what to do or looking over my shoulder and this kind of thing. And it was like the whole life that I'm living just feels wrong and I just can't do it anymore. And I'm prepared to risk everything that I have in order to live a life that is not like this.
Yeah, well, yeah, I just don't do authority very well, especially if the authority is coming from someone that I have no respect for. And I can have no respect for this government because of its support of war crimes, for its support of this financial slavery system that it's running, for its, you know, the support of the private banking interests, the support it gives to the corporate rape of our environment, you know, the cutting a hole through the barrier reef, you know, the treatment of the Aboriginal people in this country, which is nothing short of ethnic cleansing. What's going on in Palestine is very much paralleled by what's going on with the original people of this country. It's just a slower process. you know. But how can I have respect for these people? How can I respect them at all? So how can I respect anything that they presume to have authority? Or all I can see is that there's a bunch of criminals who believe they have some sort of right of ownership over me because they installed a birth certificate on me when I was young against my will through no fault of my own, no agreement of my own. They created this whole corporate system around me and told me to walk between the lines. Well, who the hell are they? Why do I have to do what they say? What am I, a threat to them if I act independently and think for myself and create and do things to the best of my ability? Am I a threat to them if I grow cannabis and heal people of cancer? You look at that. I mean, just the fact that I did a show a couple of weeks ago, Vinny, on cannabis, a show called Cannabis Cures, Government Kills. If people didn't hear it, I suggest you go to the Crow House and check it out in the archives. But I went through all the lists of uses of this plant. I mean, the outlawing of cannabis is nothing short of a crime against humanity. Now, how can I respect these people when they've allowed the corporate rape of our environment through mining companies and the cotton industry and all the stuff that they're doing, when all of these things could be fixed by using cannabis, which is a three-month annual crop, you know, a crop that grows in 3 months and it could heal all of these incredibly environmentally damaging industries. And they've also allowed the human condition of the human health to deteriorate so much by outlawing this plant. Now, the only plant that we actually have an endosystem in our body for, you have an endocannabinoid system in your body. You don't have an endolettuce system or endoparsley system, endobanana system. You have an endocannabinoid system. We've had a long symbiotic relationship with this plant, and when they outlawed it, everybody started getting sick. And all these exotic diseases, Parkinson's and cancer skyrocketed and all of this sort of stuff. You know, all of these diseases started happening, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you know, multiple sclerosis, all of these things, now, which can all be affected by ingesting cannabis oil and can all be healed by ingesting cannabis oil, or at least improved to a massive degree. Now, this is a crime against humanity. Why are we tolerating this? Well, because it's dangerous. How is it a dangerous drug? It's killed zero people in its, 26,000 years of recorded use? 12,000 years on record, but they found a rope that was 26,400 years old that was made of hemp as well. So we've been using this plant for 26,000 years, and then in the last century they outlawed, and everybody starts getting sick. We start tearing up the planet with all these ridiculously polluting industries because we banned this plant that used to be in wide use before then, even used to be the basis of all medicines before then. You know, and we just sit back and, oh, we have to do it because they wrote it on paper that it's a dangerous drug. Well, screw them. It's not a dangerous drug. They're liars. They're committing a crime against humanity, same as what they're doing in Gaza. Call them out. Yeah. Call them out. For God's sake, stop being politically correct and call these criminals out for what they're doing and ask them to please explain why we should not press charges against them. Why they need to show cause why they shouldn't be held for crimes against humanity for what they're doing and for war crimes, and why we shouldn't express a loss of confidence in all of our government's ability to govern and take the necessary steps to not only have them dismissed, but held accountable for the crimes that they are committing and are continuing to commit. But if we don't call it out, it's not going to happen. So wake up, people. It's time to wake up and pay attention to matters of state and to clean up the garden and to clean up your home. And we can do it by stopping the criminals that are running the place from running it into the ground the way they're doing. But it's only going to happen if we start speaking the truth and calling things out for what they are.
Yeah, the cannabis one's a very big one, especially to the pharmaceutical industries that are drugging up everybody and fucking up their heads. And today, in fact, I saw a video of the former head of the New Zealand Council of Trade Unions, I believe, has got terminal cancer, and she's using CBD oil that she's acquired through an anonymous source in order to treat the pain. And she's been on the media and things like this trying to talk about this, and it was an interesting piece because it showed that there are so many places all over the world where cannabis is now becoming legal, both recreationally, medicinally and industrially. And it's great, you know, you can use hemp for everything, you can live in it, you can eat it, and you can even hang the politicians with it.
Yeah, amazing stuff. And it isn't just the CBD oil. I mean, the CBD oil is good for relieving pain for sure, but you need THC as well. I mean, you've got to have the psychoactive THC oil. The THC is actually the most effective compound in curing cancer. I've cured throat cancer. I've cured stomach cancer. I've cured testicular cancer. I've cured skin cancer on myself. I've cured lymphoma. There was a guy the other week, like it only took him about probably 40 or 50 grams of pure high-grade THC oil, THC and CBD oil, the Rick Simpson oil, you know, very, very pure, took him about 50 grams. He went back to the doctor, and he was given terminal throat cancer he had. He was given about 6 months. And he went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, your cancer's gone. We don't know what you've done, but it's gone. Completely gone, completely healed. I had a big, ugly skin cancer on my back. One application of high-grade THC oil on that skin cancer, and it dissolved. It ate itself and dissolved. Well, you know, this is incredibly healing stuff.
Check this, Max. I mean, just today I had a little bit of a wound on my stomach, right? And it kind of like had gotten a little bit infected, and I took off a little bit of cannabis leaf and actually put it in the wound, and now it's kind of healed up already, like just in the last couple of hours.
Yeah, yeah, and burns as well. You can put the high-grade THC oil directly onto burns, and your burn will, it'll take the pain out virtually instantly, and the burn will heal up with no scarring.
Yeah, we talked with Rick Simpson about that yesterday on the show as well, and of course I want to take this opportunity to plug my friend Arik Rice and his documentary Drug Lord, LAWED. Search druglord.com, ladies and gentlemen. Go and buy the DVD, the documentary, and get it out there, because my goodness, it's kind of like the slam dunk. It takes you all the way through all the different ways in which cannabis can really save the planet and the human race, and sort of puts the prohibitionist argument to rest once and for all, in my opinion. It's a great movie.
Excellent. I'll check it out. How was Rick? I'll have to catch up with him, have a chat. I was speaking to him on Skype a couple of months ago. He's a good friend.
Oh, he's doing all right at the moment. He's going to be, jetting out of New Zealand for a while to go and do some filming in Uruguay, I think.
He's in New Zealand, is he?
Yeah, at the moment he's just in South Auckland, about 40 minutes drive from me.
Oh, wow, pity he can't zap across to Australia while he's down here.
Well, who knows, he might be able to. Just flick him a message on Facebook or something. I'll tell him Max is looking for him.
Yeah, I'll give him a yell on Skype. It'd be good to catch up with him. You never know. He's only 3 hours flight away.
Yeah, these things do happen. And I wonder as well, just like the cannabis issue for me is a really personal one, because I've got cannabis convictions that are preventing me from travelling, and it really sucks being stuck in this country and not being able to see this world that I'm trying to fucking save, you know?
Yeah. It's a bit of a drag, mate, bit of a drag.
Yeah, well, you know, at least I've got more reach into the wider world than most New Zealanders have at the moment, you know? Most of my audience is international. Most of my friends are outside of the country and things like that. And so, I don't know. Considering my restrictions, I've kind of made quite a big inroad.
Yeah, good on you, brother. No, it's good to see. It's good to have a voice coming out of New Zealand, man. I mean, there's a lot going on there that's the same as what's going on here. I mean, we've got the same constitution and everything. So, no, it's good. I mean, good on you for doing what you do.
Well, it's a problem here in New Zealand as well, because it's just a very, very small place, and the things that we're talking about have consequently a very tiny audience, which is why I like American Freedom Radio so much. I'm really thankful to them for giving me the gig, Max, to be honest, because if it wasn't for this this platform, there's just so many really, really cool people that I probably wouldn't have been able to get to speak to.
Yeah, very much, mate. Mm. Yeah, same with me and my radio show. I mean, it's been great. I've got to take some time off at the moment, though. I've just got too much on, and I really need to pay attention to myself a little bit. I kind of neglect myself a bit. You know, you get into this mode and you kind of work too hard, forget to eat and all that sort of stuff, you know?
There was a reported fact, I think Beyonce one time, she did 3 days of rehearsals and everything, and she didn't eat a thing, just so totally focused on what she's working on that she forgot.
Yeah, well, I do that all the time. I do that all the time. I mean, I'll go for 3 days without eating, 3-4 days without eating. Sometimes I eat like three meals a week, you know, because I just figure I'm sitting there and I'm working and I'm just doing this stuff. I go, gee, I'm hungry. And I think, when do I eat? It turns out it was a couple of days ago. So I quickly prepare something and then get back to work, you know. And yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Well, it's like workaholic monks, bro.
Well, we've got a clear and present danger, Vinny. We do. There's a clear and present danger from what these people are rolling out. And when I see the situation around the world that's happening to my brothers and sisters, you know, in Palestine, in Syria, in Iraq, in Africa, everywhere, I mean, Paraguay, I mean, everywhere, mate. It's in Panama, Venezuela, I mean, everywhere. You know, what's happening to them here? What's happening to them in our own countries even, you know? I mean, look at America. It's got the highest prison population in the history of the world. Most of them are in there for non-violent crimes, you know, white-collar crime because they're living in a system of debt slavery and they were terrible enough to take some money. Not that the government doesn't steal everything all the time and the whole thing isn't a theft in itself, but anyway.
Dude, that reminds you know, me.
And all the weed smokers and stuff that are in jail, you know. I mean, it's ridiculous, mate. It's absurd, you know. So I see this amount of tragedy. And how can you not work? What are you going to do? What, are you going to go down the beach and just sit there and enjoy myself? How can I do that? How can I do that when there's so many people around me are suffering and I know they are suffering? And I get calls from my friends in Palestine and Gaza, you know. Almost every day I get calls from these people. Sometimes I can't even answer the call because I can't bear to talk to them because I can't bear the fact that I can't get there to see them, you know. I've been trying to get back there for 2 years, and it gets hard. But how do you put that aside? How do you stop doing that and just go down the restaurant and sit down and have a beer with your friends and talk about the cricket or the football or some crap? I mean, how do you do it? How do you put it away?
You have to lie to yourself. It's the one thing that we're capable of doing is we lie to ourselves and we block out and we tell ourselves that these things don't matter, they're not happening, they're not right in front of my face right now and I can't really do anything about it, I'm disempowered, etc., etc., etc. The only way, because the brain has to react to protect itself.
Yeah, it's a load of shit, mate. It's a load of shit because we can do something about it. If people were just prepared to make their voice heard, we can. You know, if people stood up and called this out, you imagine if the whole country stood up and called this out. You imagine, like, you know, everybody finally got it, that every problem they face all comes from legislation that's put in place by a criminal cartel. And we know they're a criminal cartel because they're supporting war crimes. If we address the war crime, we address every single crime that these people have committed all in one go. The simplicity of that is so beautiful, and it's right there in front of everybody's faces, and the law even exists. And if they're going to say any of their paper's real, well, okay, let's look at that bit of paper first, because that bit of paper says everything you're doing is a crime, and we need to address that. And if you can't address that, then you're going down. We're going to take you out. We're going to take you to the Hague, and you can stand trial for all these things that you've done. We'll make the Hague work, actually. We'll appoint our own bloody people to run it if we have to. I mean, it's a courthouse in the middle of Europe. We can use it. Doesn't matter who runs it. Forget the UN. They're ridiculous, you know. But we could maybe – the UN could work. I mean, it could actually work if it was what it pretended to be, you know. But it just isn't. It isn't. It's a puppet show. It's a farce. It's a joke.
If I was running the UN, basically, it would be very similar to the government in the Hunger Games, basically. Except what you do is you just get, you know, one banker from every district, maybe even two bankers from every district, to fight to the death every year for the people's amusement. You know.
Yeah, well, that's what we could do.
Maybe the situation would solve itself eventually.
That's what I've often said, mate. Get all these warmongering politicians that want to have all these wars and all these bankers. We'll put them all on Christmas Island. We'll give each of them a ball peen hammer and they can have their war.
A ball peen hammer and a paintball gun.
Yeah, I don't even give them a paintball gun. Just give each of them a hammer. They can have their war. And then we can put the final winner up on a pedestal and give him a cabbage or something, you know?
I don't know. I just feel that they need to have this kind of pain of being blinded by a paintball right in your eye socket and that kind of thing before the ball peen strikes.
I don't even want to hurt him, Vinny. I just want them to stop doing what they're doing. But they're
let them hurt each other. You know, it's like, we're just going to put you there so you can't hurt anybody who's not a psychopathic criminal. But now you're all together, so you can have either a merry old time or you can kill each other to death. It'll be fun. All right.
Exactly.
We'll set up a hell of a lot of cameras and stuff. We'll get Endemol to publish it with their big all-seeing eye logo and
turn it into a reality TV show.
Yeah, it'll be like, we'll call it Big Brothers.
Yeah, it'd be good.
I mean, seriously, how entertained are people by violence on movies and television and anything like that? But none of the violence is real. None of the characters really die. They all come back to life and everything like that. I think this could actually be an enjoyable film experience. We'll be right back.